I don't have much admiration for politicians, not generally, and especially not right now in the middle of a pandemic. The whole question of what is best for our society, what will keep people safe, and especially what will protect our most vulnerable members of society, all of that gets measured by politicians according to the ever-shifting political winds. So I am not convinced that they are looking out for what's best for all of us, but rather what gives them political advantage. But scientists, I have a high level of admiration for scientists, for their honesty, for their commitments to the disciplines of science, for their curiosity and their desire to find clarity. Their agenda isn't political advantage, at least I don't think so, so much as it really is a commitment to finding the truths that science can offer us for the benefit of humanity. And yet, in recent weeks and months, the merging of politics and science, the conflicting information about health and health policy, the changing guidelines from different scientific institutions and sources, and the generally unknown and evolving nature of our understandings about COVID-19, the cloudiness of it all, has made it difficult to be sure about what is best, what is clear. The story keeps changing. Masks are a good illustration of the evolving nature of the advice we've received, the way that politics and science have danced around each other, and even how science, or at least government agencies charged with health and safety, have shifted and changed their stories. First, face masks were deemed by various authorities to be unnecessary for any to wear except medical personnel. Then they were advised for certain situations only. Then they were politicized. Then they were declared effective if they were medical grade, but perhaps less so if homemade. Then they were said to be advisable more to prevent you from spreading the coronavirus than to prevent you from getting it, particularly since there turned out to be more asymptomatic cases than we realized. Then masks were indicated as more necessary for indoors than outdoors. Then they were required in some places but not others, mandated in some states but not others, as if the virus respects our geographic borders. Some of that advice was clearly driven by political interests or by early concerns about the supply of personal protective equipment. But some of it was based on an increasing or changing body of scientific knowledge. Now, I'm not interested in debating what the nature of scientific knowledge is or isn't. That is, what is fact and what is theory, and at what point data is deemed reliable, and what is considered provable. And I'm also not interested in debating why some scientists say one thing and others say another, and who is right and who is reliable. But what I am interested in is this, that when we are learning about something we haven't ever encountered before, such as this virus that has been sweeping around the globe, we are, of course, always seeking new information. We are always testing new ideas. We are always learning new things. And therefore, what seemed to be true or certain yesterday, even according to science, may not be true today and may even be significantly different tomorrow. There are always more tests to be done, more theories to be explored. That doesn't mean that science has been dishonest with us. It just means that more evidence, more experience, more information will change what we claim to know. Scientific truth is elusive that way. It is evolving. And we don't always appreciate that. We don't always appreciate truth being caught up or carried along by new revelation or continuing uncertainty. Truth being something that evolves, especially when we're talking about matters of life and death. Just give me the final and firm facts, please. We want information from reliable sources and wisdom and knowledge that is clear and not cloudy. Information, facts that will help us make our best choice. Or maybe that's not even entirely honest. Maybe there is this more damning kind of truth in play. The truth that there are times when we just want to hang on to yesterday's facts, particularly if new truth is going to make our lives different or more difficult than they've been up until now, as if we could wish a virus away or pretend that racism doesn't exist. Is it just human nature that we don't want to sacrifice something for the sake of others? We claim to want the facts, to want clarity, but is that really the case? Maybe it's not clarity we want so much as control. And maybe right now, that's part of what makes everything so stressful. We have neither clarity nor control. There's way too much mystery, way too much cloudiness for our comfort. You know, it shouldn't be surprising that people resist new information or a new calling. It shouldn't be a surprise that people resist self-examination or a change in attitude. It shouldn't be surprising that people resist new and evolving truth. And so it shouldn't be surprising that in his time, in his context, Jesus and his followers, with their challenges to cultural norms, to structures of power, to the order of society, were not so popular. Coming up in the lectionary, the scriptures from which I will be preaching later this month, there are several weeks of parables that we will consider. Stories that seem simple, but run deep with meaning. And Jesus used these parables to get past people's defenses, to stir new thinking. But Jesus could also be a straight talker. His message of grace and forgiveness and healing and hope, his promise of God's love and restoration, wasn't too complicated for average ears to hear. But only people who were willing to hear it could hear it. Only people who were open to new learning or changed understanding or evolving truth could hear it. For others, for those who wanted things the way they wanted it, who wanted to keep those on top, and those on the bottom, who never really wanted to grow up, because growing up means taking responsibility for yourself and taking responsibility for the consequences of your self-serving actions, for those people, Jesus' words might as well have been gibberish. These wise authorities could hear but could not understand. Only the innocent, the unsophisticated, the ordinary could hear the real message, the real truth. That's what Jesus recognized, and that's what he said. It wasn't that the message was so cloudy, as the minds of those who wished not to hear, who wished not to change, who wished not to encounter a new truth, were cloudy. I'm sick and tired of the term fake news. Because while it's offered as a firm declaration about truth and falsehood, what it really is code for, I prefer my own opinion. I don't care what's actually true. I'm too lazy to find out what's actually true. And if the actual truth demands anything of me, particularly confession or change, I want nothing to do with it. Look, God has given us minds that can be opened to what is new and what is next. God has given us the gifts of discernment, particularly in the context of community. We may not like the news that comes our way, but we are able to consider what is before us. We have the ability to investigate and discern. And at the end of the day, we have to give ourselves over to the possibility that we don't know everything already, that there are things that are just now being revealed to us. that someone else might have some information today that they didn't have yesterday, but they have it now, and that anytime new or different information comes to us, we have to test it, not against our preferred opinions or our old ideas, but we test it against God's good news. How does it measure up against God's wisdom, God's grace, God's intentions for humanity? How does it call us to act in grace-filled ways? There is so much right now that is cloudy. News is changing all the time. Things we thought we knew about ourselves, about our health, about disease, about politics and government, about our society, about race and gender, about how the world is connected or not, things we thought we knew are being unraveled. Things are being revealed. It is as if we have been living in a cloud of false assumptions. If politicians had all the answers, now would be the time for them to reveal that knowledge. If science had all the answers, we'd have solved the mysteries of COVID. If religion had all the answers, we'd be at peace within our own hearts. If our culture had all the answers, we wouldn't be so divided. No wonder, as Jesus knows, we are weary and carrying heavy burdens. No wonder we are worn out, burned out. You're not going to think your way out of all of this. You're not going to outsmart all of this. You're not certainly not going to control all of this. Are we sick of it? Yes. Do we want to get back to normal? Of course. Do we wish we could just do what we want to do, when we want to do it, and go where we want to go, and engage the way we want to engage with those around us? Sure. It would be nice to have all the answers. It would be nice to be able to fix all the problems. It would be nice to have a magic wand and wave it for our own good and for the good of those around us. It would be nice. But instead, we have cloudiness. Hoping, at some point, for clear skies. In the meantime, God offers us, through the person and the message of Jesus, a place to land, a place of shelter, a place of peace, a pathway of restoration. Listen to Eugene Peterson's The Message translation of verses 28 to 30 of this morning's text, the last three verses. "Come to me," Jesus says. "Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." I've heard many times the version of that last verse that says, "My yoke is easy, my burden is light." But it helps me to hear it this other way. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Fall sports practices, voluntary workouts, begin this coming week at the high school level. There's a whole packet that I've read through as a parent and a coach. It covers everything from group size to face coverings, to who can attend, who can watch, to travel, to equipment, to screening and symptoms. Everything is laid out in a chart with phases that do or don't commence on different dates. It's all necessary and it's all overwhelming. It's not enough information and it's too much information. It's burdensome and assuring and complicated and incomplete all at once. It's information and facts and speculation, and it's a prelude to what it will be like when our kids go back to school. I read it, and I just wanted to crawl into a hole. I'm a smart enough person, and I can understand all the information, and even so, I just wanted to crawl into a hole. It's all factual, and it's all made up. And it gives us the illusion that we can be in control if we can only settle on the right procedures backed up by the right science. Or maybe it's the thing that a lot of churches who are moving back or have already moved back to in-person worship are committing to in terms of the faith context. The illusion that we can be in control if we can only settle on the right procedures backed up by the right science and protected by the right amount of faith. The bad news is that we are not in control. Right now, we might do the best we can, but we are not in control. We are not smart enough. We are not able to be careful enough. We are not experienced enough. We are not powerful enough. And it drives us crazy. And it drives us to pretend like we are in control. Instead, we ought to be careful, yes, and as wise as we can be, yes, and engage in communal discernment, yes, and paying attention to science, yes, and probably still taking everything that any politician says with a grain of salt, yes, and developing plans and more plans and contingency plans, yes. But after all of that, maybe it is even more important to take a big step back in prayer and in faith and ask God for this, to teach us again the unforced rhythms of grace, to show us again how to keep company with Christ, so that in the midst of everything and despite everything, we can learn to live freely and lightly, as the scripture says. Some of you know about the ducks we have at my house. I mentioned them in a sermon a while back, and I've posted some updates on social media. The latest thing, in case you didn't know, is that they have now learned that they can fly. They are of a breed that is not supposed to be able to fly, but no one told them that. So when they see us in the backyard, they fly over their chicken wire fence of their enclosure, and they come to see us. Thursday morning this past week, it went another step further. I was in the shower, and Lois knocked on the door and then stuck her head in the bathroom. "Ducks are out," she said. I finished showering, got dressed, came downstairs, went outside to put them back in their pen. They were not very cooperative, but I herded the two of them back in. No sooner had I come back in the house to gather my things to head over to the church than Lois called out from her office at the back of the house, "They're out again." I went outside again. I couldn't find them. Now I was playing hide and seek with two little brown ducks in all the bushes and plants and high weeds around the back and side of the house. I could not find them until I heard their soft quacking. They are like small children. Unless they are asleep, they cannot be quiet. I tried to herd them back into the pen again. Again, they headed off in the other direction, this time toward the neighbor's yard. I am not in control. They know it. And I know it. They want to live lightly and freely. I'm not feeling it. Until I came up with an idea. They like the area at the back of our house between the deck and Lois's office window, where the garden hose is attached and the plantings are thick. So I filled up a large container of water there, deep enough for them to swim, and guided them in the direction that they like to go anyway. I got hold of one and helped her into the water, and then the other waddled up the ramp I had set up and jumped in too, and they spent the rest of the morning there, happy as ducks can be. Does that count? Does that count for me as learning the unforced rhythms of grace? To go with what is offered to me? I hope so. At the very least, it reminded me that living lightly and freely isn't just for the birds. Jesus invites us to walk with him and to work with him, to put down the heavy burdens. Among those burdens, the burdens of trying to control what you cannot control, to learn from him, to become a little more gentle, a little more humble. Indeed, the yoke is easy and the burden is light when we keep company with him, when we learn to live freely and lightly. So, may we all move in that direction. The times we are in aren't going to get any easier, at least for a while. But perhaps we could move more easily in the world. Amen. Please join me in some moments of silent prayer and reflection.